Lansing Fisher Body Historical Team Interview. Today is April 7th, 2006. The time is approximately 10:30 a.m. We are UAW Local 602's Frank Dreyer Greenhouse. First, we'll introduce the team.
John Fiedewa.
And I'm Marilyn Coulter. Today we're here with Craig Johnson. Craig, will you please state and spell your name for us?
Craig Johnson. C-R-A-I-G-J-O-H-N-S-O-N.
And your address, please?
3031 South Washington Avenue, Apartment D7, Lansing, Michigan, 48910.
Craig, are you married?
I'm currently divorced.
Do you have any children?
Yes, I do. I have a 15-year-old son and a 13-year-old daughter.
So, Craig, where were you born?
I was born here in Lansing, Michigan.
And raised?
Raised here also in Lansing, Michigan.
What is your education level?
At 12th grade, graduated from here at Hill High School, and I got a little background in Davenport Community College as well as Lansing Computer Institute.
Okay. Were you ever in the military?
No.
What did your parents do for a living?
My mom worked in the hospital as a nurse back in the late 60s and early 70s. Then she worked at Michigan National Bank downtown, and she retired from there. My dad worked at General Motors for 32 years. He was a supervisor up in paint, and he retired back in 1998. He also did some masonry work on the side, too, as well.
So you said your father worked for General Motors. Did he work for Fisher Body?
Yes, he did.
What was that like, having a father who worked at Fisher Body?
It was a little different, you know, just... we had different areas that we worked in, which was a good thing, but... just knowing that my dad worked in this big green plant was enough. I just knew he just went to work every day, too. I grew older, then I understood more about what he was doing. So,
as a child, did you ever get to go inside the plant?
I went inside. I think one time we had a tour that went through there one time. And I remember just everything just looked strange and big and kind of scary at the time. So I was real young when I went through there.
Now, I know that supervisors have to work different shifts and swing shifts, and back then they used to rotate a lot. Was that difficult for you as a child?
Yeah, because we never had, I know, seen too often. You know, sometimes we're seen before we go to bed at night, or when we got out of school, or in the morning time before we go to school. It just depends on whenever he had to go to work. Didn't quite understand it then, too. Like I said, when I got older, I kind of understood that's part of his responsibility. So,
what did you do before you hired into Fisher Body?
As far as school, I just got out of high school when I first got hired in. I actually got hired in twice. I got hired in first in 1979, which was right after the summer of 79. And I didn't get my 90 days in, so I got laid off.
Did you plan on working in the factory after high school?
Not particularly planned on it, no. I actually thought about going into some type of military service. I was looking at the Air Force or maybe the Navy. My brother was in the Navy. He had got out of the Navy, so I was kind of looking at that, but GM was hiring, and my dad told me to go put an application in, so I did.
So, having your father as a supervisor, was it easy for you to get hired in?
I think it had its perks, yeah.
When you hired in, do you remember what your first day was like? What department did you hire in at?
Yeah, I got hired into the, I think at the time it was A-line trim department. I don't remember exactly what area, like area 20 or 30. I can't remember what area it was, but it was right behind water tests, and I had a job called suck-out job. It's like a big vacuum sweeper that you had, and you suck water out of every car that came by. You just put the hose in the car, and it sucks out all the water. So,
did you know anybody before you hired in?
Yeah, I knew several people. My sister happened to work in the same area. Matter of fact, we worked right next to each other. And, That made it a little bit easier for me to go there and work. You know, she made things a lot easier for me.
Having a sister work there for you, you had the benefit of having somebody show you the ropes and stuff like that. Did having a sister there prevent you from having new hire pranks played on you?
Yeah, somewhat. They did play, you know, little pranks on me by turning my machine off before, but they didn't do as much to me, you know, as they probably would have. But, yeah, I think she probably might have a little something to do with that.
So, you were young, and how long did you do this job?
I think it did for like a couple of weeks. Then I got transferred to another department, went to door panel area, which is like right around the corner from that job. And that job consisted of putting door panels on a specific job. Whatever job was next that we had to do, we had to put that particular panel on the same color. And, you know, so.
Was that... Well, you first of all, you said you put on different colors. How did you know what color to put on?
We had to read the manifest. I was in front of the car. And by reading the manifest, it has a certain number on it that tells you what certain... That number matched up with a certain color. And so...
So was that a difficult job to learn, having to learn the colors? And now you did you build the door panels and install them?
Yep, we had to build the panels up as well as install them, putting clips on. Then we installed it. It wasn't too difficult to learn how to do the job. It just the colors were pretty right there. It's pretty basic, and they had the colors right there and the numbers right there, so we matched them up.
And they had them right there where?
Offline when we had to go pick the panel out.
Oh, okay.
And we get them and go to the table and build them up. Then we put them up.
So, once you're in there and you're actually doing the jobs that you used to sometimes see as a child, what was that like? Were there any surprises to you coming in? What shocked you about being inside the plant?
How big it was. It was like a different world, different place. How the assembly line kept moving, and the different people that you're seeing there from different places and the different age groups that you're seeing. And it was just... It was like a little world inside of a world, you know?
When you're working night shift, were there more people closer to your age? Were there older people? And how was that, being a teenager and working nights when all your friends are out doing other things? What was that like?
We had a lot more people that were probably closer to our age, my age. Well, I was actually only 18 when I first started, so we had a lot of people in their 20s and 30s, but we had some older people too as well. It was difficult getting up that nightlife like that, because I used to get out, you know, late summer, like to get out and do things. I was driving at the time too, so it kind of took away from my friends a little bit, but they understood I had a job to do.
How did you guys get through the night? You know, was there music? Were there jokes played? How did you get through the night?
When we talked a lot, I have to get, when I moved to that new area, I have to move by one of my friends I went to high school with. And we passed away time pretty good. You know, we joked around quite a bit, you know, listening to music, and just try to keep focused on what we're doing.
In a factory, is it easy to hear a radio, or is it a difficult, or...
That's a little bit louder than normal, you know, because everything's going on, machinery's going on, the line's moving, and plus other people had their music on as two different radio stations. So,
now how did that work with two different radio stations?
Well, you know, you try to be respectful of other people because they want to listen to their stuff, but hopefully they don't turn their stuff up too loud and you don't turn yours up too loud. You know, make it so you can hear your music and not be conflicting with each other.
So, what types of things did you do for lunch and things like that?
We pretty much, like, sometimes stayed in, you know, went to the cafeteria sometimes went out, went across the street to Harry's Bar, which was right across the street from where I was working. And we ordered burgers or something like that, maybe got a couple beers or something, or went down around to the store. One person would probably drive us around to the store.
And the store is relatively close to the plant?
Yep, right around the corner from us. Yep, Safeway.
The Safeway store. So, how long did you stay in the door panel area?
Stayed there until I got laid off. Right before Christmas time, I got laid off. And I didn't get my 90 days in.
Right before Christmas?
No, I had my 80-some days in.
Was that a major shock for you to have a good job, getting good money, good benefits, and then right before Christmas, boom?
Yeah, I thought I was going to make it. It was close. And I was hoping I'd make it, you know. But, you know, I understood the nature of the beast, you know. Either you're in the 90-day probation period. In that 79, I only think they kept a few of us that stayed in 79, who came in 79. Only about maybe 10 of us stayed or something like that. Mm-hmm. But the rest of us got laid off.
How long were you laid off for?
A year and a half. So 1981, I got rehired back in.
So, when you came in, was it an automatic thing because you had already worked there? Did you have to reapply? How did you get back in?
I had to reapply. So I had to reapply. I had to stay in line, go reapply again. I believe it was at the MESC building at that time. So I had to reapply and do that.
Is that where you hired in the first time at MESC?
No, first time I had to stand out here in front, in off of Michigan Avenue and Rosemary. We were down here. It was a long line. We stayed in line, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 hours. It was a long time. I was in line.
You stood in line for 3 or 4 hours to get a job?
Yeah.
Was it hot? Was it cold?
At that time, it was kind of warm because it was summertime. So, really? Yeah.
And so in 81, was it the same thing, long line?
It was cold in 81.
Yeah. So did you have to wait a long time again?
I had to wait. I believe it was raining outside that day. We had to wait outside. It was a long line. I remember it was a long line just on Cedar Street. We just lined up going into the building. And, but, you know, hey, I think it helped out, yeah, because I did work here before. And plus my father was a supervisor, so I think it helped.
How long did it take you to get called in?
It was like a week later. I think she called me up. A week later, the lady called me up and asked me what day I want to start working. So.
And what job did you come back to that time?
I came back down the trim area on the A-line, and I was put in the glass area. Rear glass.
And so that's the back window?
That's the back window, what people call the rear window. We had to put the rear window defrost in the windows, or the clear window where you had no rear defrost. So I was responsible for building those up.
How did you like learning that job?
Didn't.
You didn't?
No. It was a pretty nasty and tricky. It was more tricky than anything else.
What did you have to do to build the glass up?
Well, we had to, you know, we get a certain job. We look at the manifest, you know, of the job that's coming down. And either tell you that it take a heated back glass or a regular back glass. And we'd get that particular glass, we put it on the table, and we'd clean the table off with some saline, the glass off with a saline solution. And then we have pedals where we can push these pedals, which makes the table spin around. And we had this, it's like a hot melt gun, and you put black tape in that hot melt, and you roll it on the edge of the glass while you press it on the pedals, and the table will go around, and you put that black tape on there. That took a while to learn how to do that. And then once you do that, you get another gun, which was primer, a black primer, and you press on the pedals again and let that go around. It's like a little brush, and it brushes right on there, right in the edge of that glass. And then when you get done with that, then you grab another gun and you put your thing on.
And your thing is a sealant, I take it?
It's like a sealer, yeah. It's a sealer to stop leaks and stop it from the heat from coming in and damaging the glass.
Oh. So once you learned that job, what was it like for you? Was it still difficult?
It was a piece of cake then. It was cool.
It was a piece of cake?
Yeah.
It seemed like both time you had what was called off-the-line jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Being a person who was relatively new, did you get people who were maybe a little bit resentful because you being a new guy and low seniority and having a, what sounds like maybe might be a preferred job?
Well, it seemed like that, but yeah, I had some little flack, you know, people didn't like the fact that I got called into the glass area, but, you know, I think I was blessed and fortunate to get that, you know, it was a higher paying job too as well, so I think it was like 10 cents more than the other person was getting, so.
So here's this kid out here having this good job doing glass.
Mm-hmm.
The people in the glass department, did they treat you well? And was that a type of job that maybe you could build up pieces and get a little extra break or something like that?
Yeah, first of all, yeah, the people in the job were, they were pretty good. I think the gentleman I worked with, I don't think he was used to working with somebody of my color. But we got along pretty well. I mean, we worked together, we talked, and I think once you get to know somebody, you don't look at the color of the skin, you know. You look at who they are on the inside. So, but we got along pretty good. We had a good partnership. The people who put the glass in, they were kind of like a little different too, but they were making extra money, but they didn't have to actually build the glass up. All they did was set the glass in. And but, yeah, we had opportunity to build up extra stock and take a little extra break, yeah.
Just segueing a little bit, you brought forth an interesting point. Many people working there from the outlying areas of Lansing. Some of them had never had an opportunity to work with an African-American male. And what was that like? Did you find that you were able to dispel a lot of myths, and after a while people treated you well? Or was that ever a problem? Were there many people of color working in your area?
We had a few of us who were of color. I know the gentleman who was setting the backlash, who picked it up off the table, he was an African-American. My relief person was a Hispanic. But there's some other people who were in the area who, I take it they lived outside of the city limits and didn't really deal with too many African-Americans or Hispanics for that nature. And did you run into anything? Of course we did, you know. And that was something I kind of anticipated because they just didn't know who you were. Plus, I ran into things before in the past and when I was younger. But the thing is that, you know, I was there to work. I was there to make a living just like he was, you know. And I didn't look at him as any different. I treated him just like anybody else, you know. And I think he's seen that. And then we got along pretty good. So we're still friends today, too, so.
Friends. Mm-hmm. So working in the plant, did you develop many long-standing friendships?
Oh, yeah. You do that. That's a given. I mean, you can't help but do that, so.
And did some of these friendships extend outside of the plant?
Yeah, even in my partner, I went seeing his daughter play basketball, man. She played pretty good basketball for, I believe, Waverly. Uh-huh. I think she was going to, Michigan State was trying to recruit her at one time, but I think she went up to, I believe, Fair State. But yeah, I went and seen his daughter play and build relationships like that, you know. Things you do outside, that's when you know you really got somebody that you care about and they're friends. You just don't do it inside, in-house. You do it out-house, too, so.
Okay, and there's one other question that kind of revolves around that. You know, some people say that. Did you see your coworkers as your brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I still do. Family? Yeah, some of them I really do. Yeah, because we know we build a rapport. You work together for 8 hours a day, side by side. You get to know a lot about people and who they are, and you just, you know, come to care for them.
That's great. Now, and talking about family. Now, you said you had a sister there. Did you have any other siblings that worked there?
Yeah, two brothers who worked there as well. I'm the youngest one, so I had two older brothers that worked there, and my older sister worked there.
So actually, you really had kind of an advantage than a lot of people because your father worked there, your siblings worked there, so you kind of knew the ins and outs before you got there, didn't you?
It kind of sort of, yeah, a little bit. I think that helped out a little bit, yeah.
Having a father as a supervisor, did that put any undue pressure on you as a supervisor's child, or did it give you preferential treatment being a supervisor's child?
As long as I stayed out of his area. he worked up in paint and I worked down in trim. I really didn't want too much to say that he had a lot to do with my success there or anything. I wanted to build things on my own, you know, that's the way I wanted to be. I mean, I know he did have a hand in helping me out, and I thank him for that. But there's some things that you really want to do on your own, and, you know, you stand up and try to be a man on your own. So, and I did that. But, yeah, some people knew, especially when I went up to paint in his area.
Now, how did you have to get up into paint in your father's area?
Well, I got hired in 81. I got laid off. And I had to level back in. I mean, I got laid off for a couple months. I think it was like 3 months.
And leveling in is what, Craig?
It's when you actually want to come back to work, but you don't care what department that you come back into. You just want to come back to work as soon as possible according to your seniority or where they needed you at.
So you ended up in paint.
I leveled off and I came back in paint right next to my dad's department.
Oh, and what was that like
for you? I didn't like it.
So, what job did you do and why didn't you like it?
I didn't like the job because I was in the main color booth. I was doing engine compartments where the job will come in. It's the first year, the first job that's there. I had a partner who worked across the line from me. And we had to be covered from head to toe with all kind of stuff, with all kind of materials and your shoes. It's all this nasty in there, running water underneath the booth. And we had to lift up the hood and latch it so we can spray the engine compartment. He sprayed one half and I sprayed the other half. But we ended up spraying each other more so than we did the car because all that stuff would just come back on us and it was just a nasty job.
You've worked with a lot of chemicals, both in urethane and now you're spraying paint. In those jobs, were there special protective equipment you had, and what was the difference between working in paint and trim?
Yeah. Trim was more open. We had some material we had to wear some gloves and spray, you know, cotton gloves, and then we had, you know, safety glasses on. But we had a lot of fans that would blow the stuff around, and we were in more of an open area. In paint, we had to have a suit, I remember I had a gray suit. I had a bandana on my head. I had two hats. Some nasty shoes. I think I wore two pairs of socks. And I wore a respirator. Because of all the fumes that it was worse. Because it was in more enclosed than it was downstairs. And when I worked downstairs in on the trim line.
So if you have a respirator, all this clothing on, how were you able to communicate with the people in your booth?
You didn't do too much communicating. You sprayed them, or you ran over and tapped them on the shoulder or something like that. Then you had to yell kind of loud because it was pretty loud in there too. So, and you have to kind of speak real loud to just even communicate. So sometimes you really didn't want to communicate because it was so much work just to communicate with somebody.
Really? So because there was paint and stuff like that, you weren't able to read or anything like that?
No.
When you worked up in paint, you said when you were in trim for lunch, sometimes you would go out for lunch. Having to wear all that garment and all that equipment, were you able to go out for lunch? And then what were you able to do for lunch?
Mainly, either I brought my lunch or went to the cafeteria because it was just restricted as to how much time you had. We got extra relief for it, called heat relief, because it was hot in there. They want to give you extra relief, but it still wasn't enough time to take off your stuff and go outside and do what you wanted to do. You know, no, I pretty much stayed indoors and brought my lunch or went down to the cafeteria.
Now, once again, now that you're in your father's department, did you find that there were things that were expected of you being his son in his department? How was that working in the department where your dad was? Did people look at you different, treat you different?
Yeah. I remember he took me out to the side one time trying to show me how to paint the job. I actually got moved to another job inside the paint booth, which was called Door Jam. So I would paint just my door on my side, which made it a better job, but still was still nasty. But and he took me to the side showing me, you know, this is how you paint this and that. I didn't want to be in the booth no more. I didn't like it. It was restricted. I just didn't like being in there. And some people knew I was, you know, who I was. They would come by the window and knock on the window and wave, you know, at you and stuff like that. And, you know, I couldn't stand that. I was getting depressed up in there, to tell you the truth. I just didn't like it. And, but they knew who I was. More people up in paint knew who I was, that was his son. And did they give me any treatment, special treatment? Yeah, because I was coming in late sometimes, and the supervisor, that was my supervisor, he said, you got to stop coming in late. I said, get me out of the booth, now I'll start coming in late. So, but eventually I did. I worked my way. I got out. I got a restriction to get out. And eventually I went back to my old department. They had return rights. So I went back down to the trim department.
So you went back down to the trim department. Yep. When you went back down to the trim department, did you go back into the glass area?
Back in glass area, yes, I did.
And so you were fortunate. Did you go back to the same job again?
Back to the same job. Matter of fact, they changed their job because it was a big changeover that happened at that time in 84. And when I came back, instead of us building the glass up by hand, the robot would actually do it. So we had actually got robotics down there. And all we had to do was mark the job off, get the glass, put it in on this table, make sure you take down the two wires for the rear defrost, and push two buttons.
That was it?
And the robot did the rest.
That's all you had to do?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so it sounds as though you went into an even better job than before.
Yes.
Tell me, what was that like? How did you pass your time? How did you have your breaks?
Well, I had more time to do breaks because I could I could fill up the robot. Hey, man, I could have either somebody else could run a couple of jobs for me. If you need to be, plus the bathroom was real close by, so we could do that. We couldn't build up as much stock, though. That's the only thing. We didn't have no racks to build up stock because the robot was doing all the work. But the robot can hold like five jobs in it at one time, so I can load that five jobs up and I can take off and come back in time to have that job running through there. So
this was a transition period because now the first time you came in 79, they were building what?
The Cutlasses.
The Cutlasses in the 98s.
In the 98s, yep.
And so you come back and you work, and they're building those for a period of time. Mm-hmm. Then in 84 is when they had the big model changes and they began building
the Grand Ams.
Mm-hmm. So what was that transition like?
It was different. I mean, we didn't, I know a lot of people loved that they had the big 98 that was rolling through there, but this was different because now you knew things were changing and that GM had to make some changes, and they banked a lot of money on this, on the Grand Am. They did so much that they put a whole bunch of money down in our glass area, mm-hmm. to have things running like that. They were even going to have the robotics put the glass on the job.
Wow.
But it didn't work out because they kept breaking the glass.
So the robot was breaking? So,
yeah, the robot had to go.
It couldn't do everything that the people could do.
No, it couldn't handle that job.
Greg, at that time, were you still working nights?
I was working nights, yeah.
You work your nights. Mm-hmm. Now, is that a preferred shift for you, nights, or is it just because your seniority gave you that time?
At the time, I preferred it, and my seniority allowed me to be on nights.
Why did you prefer nights?
Fun. More funner. More people of my age. Got to know some more people down there. The area I worked in was pretty live.
So, a couple of questions here. Number one, did you ever have the opportunity to work days?
My seniority in the glass area, no. To tell you the truth, no.
So, how did you know it was more fun?
Well, I figured there were younger people on night shift than it was day shift. And I just got to know people, and we just started hanging out with each other, and, you know, so.
What made it fun?
Just the laughter we had, you know, go out and party a little bit, and you know, the girls down there, we had fun with them, and. You know, this is a good area. It was just good. We just had fun.
Can you tell me what one of your best moments was?
One of my best moments. Okay, one of my best moments. On that job, you mean? That particular job?
During your history.
During my whole history. I tell you one moment I'll never forget that was special to me. It's when my dad actually retired. And I know it's maybe a little different, but to see him actually retire. I went up, had a chance to go up to his job. We brought some family members in, and they had a chance to see him actually retire, and how many people respected my dad. Mm-hmm. And that was I'll never forget that day. That was a pretty cool day, and I was real proud of him that what he done, and that's something I don't know, that always sticks in my mind, that, you know, I was proud of him doing that. So
did that make it all seem like it was worthwhile then?
Yeah, it gave me more incentive. He said, I want to get out of here too, so.
So the other side of that is, what was one of your worst days?
One of my worst days, let's see. One of my worst days is when one of my friends was doing drugs, mm-hmm. and he was in the bathroom. And he was doing intravenous drugs, and they wanted me to go in and get him out. And I knew him, I was trying to work with him, trying to help him out, so I went in there, and, you know, we talked to him, and he was locking himself in the stall and stuff like that. And he was, and of course, he was, you know, he's already high and stuff like that. But just his wife had actually got access, and I don't know how she got into the plant. But she got through security, and she actually came down there and came in there. And just to see a look on her face, that was real bad. It was pretty bad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I felt for him, and he was a real good friend of mine. I tried to help him out, but, you know, I don't know. I haven't heard from him in the last several years, so I don't know what happened to him. But that was probably one of my low points.
Mm-hmm. Now, that also brings us to a different part. Between the UAW, GM, they have had different programs because that's a reality. That's mm-hmm. a part of the times. Did you find that the different programs, be it the employee assistance programs or the NA programs that they have, were they able to help many fellow young people?
Yeah, I can speak on, you know, experience from my own self because I was also in that situation too. I had actually overdosed on drugs myself before, And I used it, the program too as well. Came over to the NA meetings and the AA meetings. And I'm glad that was in place, because at least you had something that you can go to and that people really wanted to try to help you out. And you know, Ralph Beggs and Frank Dreyer were two people that really helped me out. With all the stuff I've been through, you know, they stuck by me. They tried to help me out as much as possible whenever I needed it. And I'm still here today. So I thank them for that, that they actually helped me out. So
that's awesome. Did you find that having gone through those things and working, and maybe some parts of the environment was still around you, did that make it difficult for you to work?
Yeah, it made it difficult, but once you OD on something, you think twice about it. So that made it a little bit more mm-hmm. different that, you know, I don't want to go that route no more. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you had your friends that you had built rapport with, that they were still doing it. Mm-hmm. And they wanted you to come along and stuff like that. But it was hard at first. But, you know, once I just resisted and stayed away, it's, I'm not staying away from you people per se, but I am. But I'm staying away from the drugs and alcohol, because that's not what it's about.
Craig, I know that, just so the people know all about what goes on inside there, it's not, there's also different types of parties.
Oh yeah.
And I know that personally, since I do know Craig personally from childhood, you hang out with a different kind of crowd, and there's different types of things that went on during lunch breaks and stuff. You want to tell us a little bit about some of those other groups that met during lunch too?
You mean the first group, the party groups, or what?
Well, I know we had the party groups, uh-huh. and we went to the bars, and yep. we had drinks, and obviously some people did drugs. Mm-hmm. But the other side of that was that okay. you were, I know that you're born again, mm-hmm. and I also know that there are religious groups that meet throughout the plant at night too. Mm-hmm. You want to tell us a little bit about that? Were you a participant of that at
all? Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had we started. Actually, Raymond Jackson was a gentleman who started Bible study down in Trim, and I remember we had like about six people there, and all of a sudden it grew to almost 30, and that was great. That was something that was good. That was something that was needed, because people need another outlet. Drugs and alcohol are not an outlet. That's a cover up for what they're really feeling on the inside. Something that's missing is a void. And they want to fill that void up, and that doesn't do it, because it wears off. Mm-hmm. But that helped out quite a bit. We even started trying to get some AA meetings going on in there. We would sit down and talk to people. I had people, strangers, come up to me and ask me questions. And I would sit down with them at lunchtime and just talk to them. And because it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't just an alcohol drug thing. It was a personal world, things that they had going on. They didn't know how to deal with it. They thought their way of dealing with it was drinking or drugging. So that same thing happened to me. So we felt, why not give back to them that something that we've been helped out with? So,
and that's part of being, as they say, Fisher Body was its own little city.
Right.
And just like all cities, they have good things and bad things happening, and good things and bad things to access, and things to help you recover from that. Mm-hmm. As your life changed, and now have you always worked in Trim?
No. Before the plant closed, I actually moved down to the body shop, I believe in 1997. Mm. I went down to the body shop. I wanted to go to the day shift because my children were getting older and they were starting to get involved in sports. Mm-hmm. And I was missing their events because I was working nights. Mm-hmm. And I said I had to do something about it. So I tried to, you know, in my area at the time, actually I had moved from rear glass to side glass to door glass at this time. Mm. I had to make a change, and so it was something that I had to do for my family. So I went down to body shop and went to day shift.
What was, you've worked in body, you worked in Trim, you've worked in paint, you went to Trim, now you're in body shop. Tell me about the body shop. What's it like to work in the body shop? And that's raw metal and things like that?
Yeah, nothing but gray, raw metal. It's different. You know, you didn't see no colors in the cars. The atmosphere was different. It was louder, more robotics going on, more spot welds and flying all over the place. So different type of atmosphere than what the Trim shop was. you had to wear certain protective sleeves and gloves and earplugs, and down the trim you could wear shorts and stuff like that. So it was totally different. Yeah.
Did you, how long did you work at the body shop?
Worked there till the plant closed in May of, till May of 2005.
Did you once again have the ability to fall into yet still another great job?
Well, this is a little bit different. I consider it to be a pretty decent job. It wasn't too bad. When I first got down to the body shop, I was working. This one guy and I were working on this one. Like, we're doing, it's called, I think, the IP bracket. But the thing about, we had to work together. He worked on one side of the car, I worked on the other side. We had this assist that we both had to pull down at the same time. Mm-hmm. Because he had to put a plate in on his side. He had to put my plate in on my side at the same time. It was a very easy job. But the fact is, I was tied to him. Mm-hmm. So whenever I wanted to do the job, I had to wait for him, and vice versa. He had to wait for me, or... so that was all right. Then I put a transfer in to go down to the J car, which was offline build up.
And that was a good job.
Yeah, it was more spot welds and stuff like that. So I had bigger guns, and I had to do a lot of spot welding. I had to work with some other people, but it was offline and we got the job done faster, and so we had more time for breaks.
Now, spot welding is what's spot welding?
It's a gun that actually welds the metal together. So you get like two pieces of metal that you want to weld together in order to make a frame or side frame. And you put that gun in that certain spot and you press the trigger and it welds that stuff together. So
you're in the body shop. New people. Once again, what types of things did you guys do for like holidays and weekends and... when you were working, and what was that like also working 6 days a week and being a father?
It was difficult because I get my children every other weekend, so some weekends I would have to take them over to my mom's house, pick them up on Friday, and then take them over there and then pick them up after I got off work. So it was kind of difficult. It took a little time away from them. Mm-hmm. But I tried to do whatever I could do to spend quality time with them. We did have parties down there all the time, you know, whenever holidays came up. You know, we had some people who were in charge of getting things together. We would bring the stuff in, and they would cook stuff like right down there on the line. So it was cool. We had a good time down there.
That's nice. I know some people often had the skilled trades people do things called government jobs, where they might get something special. Did you ever have anybody make anything special for you or have a government job done for you?
You mean like what do you mean like type of government job?
A government job. Did you have somebody give you an extra fan quicker? Did you get a toolbox made for you or a special chair? Or did you ever have any government jobs to help make your job easier?
No, not really. No. The job I was on at that time, no, we didn't. We pretty much had everything we needed down there. But no, I think maybe I got a fan a little faster than... Didn't know yet. I asked for one day and it was there the next day. So
now I know that at Fisher Body they've had a lot of different programs. Have you ever been a participant of those programs? Did you ever get involved in any of those implant programs? And what did you think about it? Did it help the workers?
Programs as far as...
Well, I know they had employee participation groups. Mm-hmm. They had QWL, Quality Work Life. They had product development. Did you have any suggestions? Did you ever get involved with any of those types of programs?
Somewhat I did. I wasn't too much into it. I remember you one got me started in the union. You know, you had let me go to Black Men in Union at that time, and I really wasn't interested in the union whatsoever. But the older I got, the more time I spent in there, the more things I said, either I got to shut up and put up, or just let things happen.
So when you got involved with the union, can you tell me what type of activities have you participated in and what types of committees have you participated in?
Well, I started off, I was on the election committee. I did go to Black Men in Union, late 80s, early 90s, I believe. I was on community service. Then I went to a workers' comp unemployment rep, which I am currently still that right now. Harold Brown's the chair. And I'm currently the conservation recreation chairperson.
Okay, so you're really active, Don. Now, a couple of things. First of all, you said community service. What does a community service person do?
Pretty much service the community. Whatever, you know, little events that went on, maybe helping build a little home or something like that. We did that. Any little fundraiser that we had going on to help out, blood drives and things of that nature. So,
now you speak of with community service. I know oftentimes people don't really know everything that UAWGM workers do. And you want to speak about that a little bit? Were people always really receptive when I know they did Toys for Tots and blood drives? Were people, how were the workers when it came time to helping other people?
Workers were great. I think more workers. I think we did so much for, you know, this United Way and Toys for Tots that I don't know. I think we helped them out immensely, to tell you the truth. The people were great. People are big-time givers. You may hear them complain a little bit here and there, but when push comes to shove and they know what it's going for, it's going for a good cause, then they pretty much would, you know, would give and donate.
Were people willing to do benefits and stuff to help co-workers? Do you remember any of that?
Like any fundraiser benefits or anything?
Well, I know sometimes people are sick or maybe somebody's died. Have they helped their co-workers, their internal family that way?
Yeah, we used to always give pass cards around and for people that maybe have been sick. We would go visit them, send flowers to them, attended a couple of funerals, you know, whatever. Whatever people were in need, because they become a part of a family and big-time friends, so...
And you're also currently an alternate workers' compensation. And what do you do with that? How do you affect your fellow employees that way?
Hopefully you help them get paid. whenever they go, we go for a shutdown or something like that, something affects us that we have to go on layoff. Then we, Harold Brown and myself, we try to get together to try to make it more effective for the workers, that they can get paid on a regular basis. They have to call the Marvin system. We try to give them all the information that we can, have informational meetings for them. We try to make sure that they get their subpay. As long as they get their unemployment, they get the subpay on time. Anytime they're dealing with workers' comp, we try to give them, point them in the right direction, give them the advice. We can't tell them exactly what to do, but we give them advice as to, you know, what they can and can't do. If they need a lawyer, we get them appointed to the right lawyer. If it's going to be, you know, sick leave or comp, you know, do you have a case? And then we'll help, you know, help fight the case for them. We stand behind them. So
it's a really busy, it sounds like that's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, big time, yeah.
And you also are currently the recreation chair.
Yeah.
And that's a big job.
Oh, very big, yeah.
And it's a busy one.
Very busy, yeah.
So what do you think about that?
It's a challenge. It's different. It's kind of exciting, though, setting things up for our members to enjoy them and their families and friends, to go out and enjoy the events that the community has for us. I think I have a great committee. I know John, he's on the committee, so he's been a great help, too. It's been a learning curve, you know, but the more you do it, the more you get used to it. I know the context to get in contact with now. And starting to get to see some perks from that too as well. So
being the worker, the recreation conservation chair, and having the different excursions, do you feel that you're an intricate part of helping form the family and to keep it together? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I want to try to do that. You know, some more in the near future. Try to get some more family oriented type of things, because I think it's important to try to keep the family together, especially during this time, this day and age. It's good when family can get together and you meet your other people, other friends and their families, and you get to know one another and you get to, you know, be more personable, get to, you know, see where they come from.
Do you also feel that maybe it helps in developing the solidarity amongst coworkers?
Yeah, I would hope so, yeah. I mean, I think...
Playing together and working together?
Yeah. I know we just had this one trip that went to the Pistons game. And I was surprised that we got three buses full of people.
Three buses?
Yes. I was real surprised by that we had three bus loads that went down to the Pistons game. I was not anticipating that. I really wasn't. But it's good to see more people come out and enjoy these events that we do have.
That's pretty awesome. You've done a lot and you've been involved in a lot. You grew up in Lansing.
Yep.
Your father worked in Lansing. Fisher Body mm-hmm. has obviously meant a lot to your family.
Mm. Yep.
Now, it was always known as the capital of quality. What do you think that? Why do you think that is?
Our plant was a capital of quality? Mm-hmm. I believe that when you come to know and work with the people that you work with inside there, I think people took pride in what they did. It's one thing, it's a motivator to get a paycheck. Yes, it is. I think that's for anybody. But to know that you actually put forth the effort to help build the product that people are going to drive in, that you and your family can even drive in, and to do it the best way that you can, I think a lot of us take pride in that. I think we have the best workforce in the country, in the world, probably.
With us, once again, Lansing's changing. The facility that we knew as Fisher Body, as we speak right now, across the street, is being torn down. How does that make you feel, knowing that it's been here all your life and all your family's life? What do you feel about that?
It hurts a little bit. It hurts. I mean, it's something that you work in it 25 years. You become attached to that. My dad worked in there, and people, their fathers and their grandfathers worked in there before they did, you know, and it's big time history and heritage that you're seeing right here in the heart of Lansing to go through what it's going through right now, you know, being demolished, you know. It hurts because you got so many memories, because you built up that rapport inside there. But I also know that we do have another facility that we do that's out here in Delta, that we can carry that heritage over to the next plant. Whatever we learned here, we take it over there. And you take pride in where you come from. I don't forget where I come from. Mm-hmm. But you always, you know, you want to take that with you and to build the same thing that we had over here, we take it over there with us. So,
Craig, we've talked about a number of different things in this short time we've been together. Is there anything that you like that I haven't touched on that you'd like to be sure that people know?
No, I just think you didn't know. I think a lot of people get misconceptions about GM workers, and that we're just bowlers and beer drinkers, and you know, and a lot of us are not. We're not like that. I think a lot of us, we take pride in what we do. We're a proud group of people. We're fun-loving, great people. We're looking to make a difference in our communities and our lives and other people's lives. And we're looking to build quality products. We know we got big tasks ahead of us. We got Toyota that's being a monster in front of our face. But I know we keep pushing. We're going to beat them. And that people got to know that they need to learn how to stand behind who we are. And not go by per se or what other people are saying about our quality, or that we're just, you know, we don't do good work, that we're just drinking and stuff like that. People don't do that stuff. No. We take pride in what we do. We're ready to kick some butt. So
you said something, and as I look at your shirt, there's something that makes me go, there's one other thing I want to talk about too. A lot of people, did you find that the once you were working there, that the education level of your coworkers surprised you at all, as far as mm-hmm. people working there with degrees and things like that?
You got all different types. You got people who probably just got GEDs, up to people who got PhDs and probably, you know, MDs or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. You find all types of people in there, mm-hmm. you know, but you respect them for who they are.
I found that when I was working there, it was amazing the number of people who had their master's degrees mm-hmm. and or who were working on right. their degrees, who came there, and the level of education mm-hmm. that's on the floor. And also, once again, through a UAWGM negotiated benefit, right. they have a tuition assistance program. Right. Was that a program that you utilized, or did your children utilize?
I use it. Yes, I have. I definitely use that. And hopefully in the near future, my children will utilize that too as well. I mean, it's a benefit that's given to us that we've been, it's negotiated for us, you know. So why not use it? At first, of course, you know, like I said, I wasn't involved. But once I started getting involved, I said, you know what? We got so many benefits that we have available that we don't take advantage of those things. And we need to start doing that. And I hope more people will start doing that. Yes, we have some awesome people in there. We got some great smarts. I tell you that, I met some awesome people that are really smart. And I like to hang out with them because then they, people think I'm smart too. So,
so you participate in the building, you're participating in the plant, and it's nice that you, it seems the best thing about it is, seems like you've been given a lot and you have given back a lot. Mm. And you're helping people along the way. So all I can say is thank you for the awesome interview and giving your time.
Thank you for the opportunity. I enjoyed it.